This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris drew contrast between her and former President Donald Trump Tuesday in her first rally as presidential candidate.
Before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds.
Harris painted Trump as someone found guilty of fraud, liable for sexual abuse, and someone who conjures chaos, fear, and hate from an event hall in suburban Milwaukee, a city in the swing state of Wisconsin. The top two U.S. Democratic congressional leaders Tuesday endorsed Vice President Harris to be their party's presidential nominee.
Vice President Harris will soon be our nominee and will be elected president in November. We are brimming with excitement, enthusiasm, unity.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and also House of Representatives Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries ended days of questions over whether they would join the growing number of Democrats in supporting Harris's bid for the party nomination. For the November 5th election, President Biden dropped his bid for re-election on Sunday amid worries that he no longer had the physical or mental stamina to wage what is expected to be a grueling race against Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump. The U.S. Treasury Department is ordering the nation's banking industry to start disclosing its holdings of Russian assets, with the goal of eventually seizing those billions of dollars in assets and selling them to aid the devastated Ukrainian economy. The disclosure is required under new law passed by Congress earlier this year, known as the Repo Act, which gives the U.S. government the authority to seize Russian state assets. This is VOA News. The death toll from two landslides in southern Ethiopia has jumped to 229 and could rise further as the search for survivors and casualties continued into a second day. Following heavy rain, a landslide buried people in southern Ethiopia Sunday night, then a second one engulfed others who had gathered to help Monday morning. Footage shared by the local administration showed people digging up bodies with shovels and bare hands. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said that he was deeply saddened by the terrible loss of life and that federal officials had been deployed to reduce the impact of the disaster. Kenya's anti-government protesters were met by counter-demonstrators in the capital on Tuesday in the latest unrest since demonstrations erupted over proposed tax hikes last month. Reuters correspondent David Doyle.
Pro-government protesters clashed with anti-government rivals on Tuesday morning before being dispersed by police who fired tear gas. One anti-government protester said they were being unfairly targeted. Protests erupted in June against proposed tax hikes. They have since grown into a wider movement against President William Ruto's government. More than 50 people have been killed after marches that were initially peaceful turned violent.
An explosion at a Jose Cuervo tequila plant in central Mexico killed at least five company workers, forced evacuation of tourists from the area in the spirit's hometown of Tequila. The head of the state's emergency services said on Tuesday, Victor Hugo Roldan, the chief of emergency services and firefighters in Jalisco State, told Reuters the blast occurred in a 500,000-liter tank at the plant, and the resulting fire was put out by company personnel. At least two other tanks at the facility, operated by the world's largest tequila maker, also collapsed. In a statement, the company confirmed the death toll from the accident. Taiwan has shuttered offices, schools, and tourist sites across the island ahead of a powerful typhoon due to make landfall later Wednesday. Typhoon Gimi already worsened seasonal rains in the Philippines, where at least 12 people have died. Typhoon had winds of 100 miles per hour Wednesday morning. Heavy rain was falling in much of Taiwan. It did not make landfall in the Philippines, but enhanced its seasonal monsoon rains. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 24th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. voters face a new presidential campaign.
I hope they can look past anything else and look at that. But the world we live in, some people will and some won't. And I hope it's not enough people that stand away or use that as an obstacle for her to get in office.
Cameroon's opposition and civil society condemn government threats towards President Biya's opponents. A Sierra Leone lawyer questions the guilty verdict of alleged coup plotters. Ugandan police arrest dozens of protesting youths.
We are protesting against escalating levels of corruption in Uganda. I was marching because I want Anita Among to resign. She has stolen from this country. These resources are not hers. This is taxpayer money.
And some African countries are making progress towards achieving the worldwide goal to end AIDS threat by 2030. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Voters in the United States are facing a new presidential campaign, with incumbent Joe Biden dropping out and Vice President Kamala Harris likely to be the Democratic Party's nominee to face Donald Trump in November. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns looks at how some voters are reacting to the change.
In Joe Biden's hometown of Scranton, Pennsylvania, voter Eric Boylan says Democrats had little choice but to push Biden out.
I think he was a very good leader, but I do kind of also agree that his time has come and it's time to step aside and let somebody, you know, somebody rise up within those ranks.
Voter Christine Stoll says if Biden is unfit to be a candidate, he should step down as president.
He should have dropped out a long time ago. He never should. He should leave the White House. He is not mentally stable enough to run this country.
Making Vice President Kamala Harris the nominee improves the party's chances against Republican candidate Donald Trump, says voter Daniel Brennan.
Harris polls well against Trump, so I think she has a real shot at winning. And I think he's doing the right thing right now, despite some people being so nervous and saying it's disastrous.
On a visit to Washington, Pennsylvania voter Bill Mills says Harris shares responsibility for Biden's economic failures.
We're noticing an increase in the price of groceries and fuel and the price of living, and our lives are worse now. And Vice President Harris is riding on those coattails. So it's going to be very hard to shake that opinion when we have all witnessed an economic downturn in all of our lives.
In Michigan, voter Jason Potts says the switch gives the Democratic Party a chance to connect with younger voters.
I always thought we're just Biden time until someone a little more tenacious comes along. And we'll see if that's Kamala. She's got more fire, definitely. And
as Vice President Harris worked on controlling illegal immigration, Florida voter Christopher Rangel says her failure at the border makes her unqualified to be president.
Kamala's garbage. She's worse than Joe. Are they on the same page? They're about the same. But I don't think anybody's going to vote for Kamala. No one wants to back her. She had one job. That was handling the border.
In Washington, voter Alicia Jefferson hopes people do not see the vice president only as a woman of color, but look to her accomplishments.
And I hope they can look past anything else and look at that. But the world we live in, that some people will and some won't. And I hope it's not enough people that stand away or use that as an obstacle to for her to get in office.
New Yorker Andrew Varshavsky says it will be tough for anyone to beat Trump.
Even if Biden were to stay in the race, or whoever we have right now as a Democrat, that it's right now it's Trump's race to lose. So as I'm a Democrat, I think it's going to be hard for us to win this race, no matter what happens now.
Harris appears to have enough commitments from party delegates to be the nominee, but it will take next month's Democratic National Convention in Chicago to make her the party's official candidate to challenge Trump. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
The United States announced Tuesday that it had invited Sudan's warring sides to hold ceasefire talks next month. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Washington had invited Sudan's regular army and the paramilitary rapid support forces to start U.S.-mediated negotiations beginning on August 14 in Switzerland. The French news agency AFP says the talks will include the African Union, Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and the United Nations as observers. Security agency in Uganda's capital made a number of arrests on Tuesday as protesters marched near parliament to stop what they call abuse of power and high levels of corruption. Businesses were shut down and roads towards parliament blocked as security agencies arrested pockets of young demonstrators. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
A heavy military and police presence in and around Kampala left the streets deserted as pockets of young people marched toward parliament Tuesday. Under the hashtag March to Parliament, demonstrators demanded the resignation of Speaker of Parliament Anita Among, along with four members of parliament who recently shared an award of $460,000 for public service. They also called for an audit of legislators' income. Many of the unarmed placard-wielding protesters were thrown into police vans. Salim Papawere spoke to journalists from under police van seats where he'd been pushed.
We are protesting against escalating levels of corruption in Uganda. I was marching because I want Anita Among to resign. She has stolen from this country. These resources are not hers. This is taxpayers' money.
Almost an hour later, another group of nine youth appeared just meters from parliament. Before they too got arrested and thrown into the police van. Kiria Samson was among that group of nine arrested.
Drugs in the hospitals, bad roads. Kampala is the pothole capital. It's because of corruption. We are tired.
Parliament spokesperson Chris Obore told VOA protesters should have addressed their concerns through proper channels instead of demonstrating.
This one is something this guy is as a petition. If it is about the Speaker of Parliament is not appointed by anybody. The Speaker of Parliament is elected by members of Parliament. Is it members of Parliament demanding her to resign? The campaign around the Speaker Anita Among is a smokescreen by those who have their ulterior motives.
In May, both the United States and United Kingdom sanctioned Speaker Among over reports of corruption and abuse of office. There was hope that today's protests would mimic events in neighboring Kenya, where youth have been protesting since June, and successfully forced Kenyan President William Ruto to withdraw a proposed tax hike and overhaul his cabinet. Activist and law professor Businje Kabumba says it's unfortunate that Uganda's parliament has gone ahead to sit without acknowledging the protesters' demands. He thinks protests in Uganda could still unfold the way they did in Kenya.
I see today as being the starting shot in what is likely to be a longer struggle. But either way, I think the critical similarities are to do with the genuine concerns of the youth and their determination to change the political system in which they find themselves.
While Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni warned protesters that they were playing with fire by marching to parliament, no tear gas was fired Tuesday to disperse onlookers. It was not immediately clear how many protesters were arrested or when they might appear before courts. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
For more on the situation in Kampala, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Cisse Kagaba, a lawyer and the former executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition of Uganda.
The protest has happened. It may not have been necessarily in the big number that people probably would have expected. But I would say that the youth have used a rather interesting strategy whereby they haven't met at one particular place, but you've seen others coming from different locations, not necessarily organized, which I think for me is a plus. But of course, again, you wouldn't expect the big numbers because of the heavy deployment, the intimidation that government has put in place. Because, I mean, by yesterday, we saw quite a number of heavy artillery moving around town. So, and of course, for those that have managed to reach parliament, some of them have been arrested. But even those that haven't reached parliament, as long as they're holding placards, they have actually been arrested. The only, again, interestingly, some of the lawyers, I think, including the president of the Uganda Law Society, some of them have been denied access to those that have been arrested, which I would say is unfortunate and does infringe on a person's right to legal representation. But by and large, I think we haven't really seen fatalities like shooting at people. But of course, there have been some form of mishandling or manhandling of particular protesters. But in as far as loss of life currently, I don't think I've been able to see any online as per now.
We understand that a lot of heavy military deployment and police, and as you said, some people were arrested. Are those who are protesting willing to continue given that intimidation?
I think they are, because there are quite a number of Twitter or say X spaces that are currently ongoing, and you can tell that the momentum is still on. They are actually saying they want also to continue tomorrow. So I think this is something that is most likely to continue. And again, when you follow what is online, the lawyers that I think that are on standby, see that people are willing to provide meals, the others that are willing to provide medical assistance. And the uniqueness, again, in what we've seen in this is that we've seen some others sporadically coming up, like in Hoima. I think the people in Hoima who are also engaging. So you may anticipating that maybe as the week goes by, you may have others springing out in different parts of the country, not necessarily the capital.
Siseka Gaba is a lawyer and the former executive director of the Anti-Corruption Coalition Uganda. She spoke from Kampala with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 24. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The executive director of the United Nations AIDS Agency, UNAIDS, says several countries in Africa are making good progress towards achieving the worldwide goal to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. However, Winnie Byanyima says for the international community to be successful, world leaders must ensure adequate resources, resolve the debt burden of low-income countries, and protect rights by ending discrimination. Byanyima spoke with me from Munich, Germany, where this year's Global AIDS Conference is taking place.
Remember, the whole world came together, governments agreed and set a target in the Sustainable Development Goals that they would end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Whether or not we achieve that will be determined by the actions of our leaders in the next 1, 2, 3 years. And we are saying in that report, there are three vital areas to address if we are to be on the road to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. One, leaders will need to ensure that there is adequate resourcing for vital HIV services. And to do that, they need to close the gap. Globally, there's a gap of $9.5 billion in the global HIV response that needs to be closed. And it's mostly for the developing countries who can't afford to cover their own response. Secondly, we need to resolve the debt crisis for the low-income and middle-income countries in the South. They have to have debt restructuring to enable them to pay for their part of the HIV response. Thirdly, we need to ensure that life-saving technologies that are coming online, that are hitting the market today, reach all people who need them and not be the preserve of people in rich countries. We need to get these medicines down to the lowest price.
Which African countries would you say are making some progress in terms of containing this disease?
First of all, in the whole world, we are seeing declining infections. If you look at 2010, only 47% of people living with HIV were on treatment. Today, 77%. New infections are declining fastest in Africa. Deaths are declining fastest in Africa. So we are seeing success mostly in Africa. There are 9 countries which have already reached the targets we set for midterm 2025. And among them are countries like Zimbabwe, countries like Malawi, countries like Rwanda. 7 of them are African. The other 2 are Denmark and Saudi Arabia, already reaching halfway target. Swaziland, can you imagine Swaziland, that small country, has already achieved the midterm targets. So Africa is actually doing well, but remember, Africa is starting from a low level. For 10 years, we did not have treatment when it was already there in Europe and America.
Let me ask you, Winnie, these days when you look around Africa and elsewhere, you see many laws are being proposed and implemented, some of them against LGBTQ people. What is the view of your organization about some of these laws?
One big problem we are seeing in Africa and the rest of the world is the pushback on rights. The fact that we are seeing a wave of new laws to further criminalize people who have same-sex relationships, people who are transgender and just look different from everybody else, and people want to criminalize them and persecute them. The fact that sex workers, whatever they are doing, God should judge them, but instead governments get in the way and criminalize them, and they become victims of policing and victims of men who want to take advantage of them. All these things drive them away from services. And the result is all these people are actually part of the whole of society and keep spreading the HIV virus. We need to give them their rights and their space to be. If you think they are not doing the right thing before God, let God judge them. But let the state give them their rights as citizens to health.
Winnie Mbiayima is the executive director of UNIDS. She spoke with me from Munich, Germany. Condemnation is widespread in Cameroon following government threats to arrest civilians who criticized the country's president. The warnings increased after Cameroon's political opposition accused President Paul Biya of postponing elections. In a release on Tuesday, Human Rights Watch described the threats as censorship of free speech. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon's opposition says it is not intimidated by threats from officials who are warning them to stop saying negative things about President Paul Biya. This week, government spokesperson René Emmanuel Sadi said it was unacceptable for people to use irreverent language about the 91-year-old president. Before Sadi's statement, Emmanuel Marielle Jingdent, a top local government officer in the unit where Yaoundé is located, announced he would expel anyone from the capital who insults Biya or state institutions. On Tuesday, Human Rights Watch said Jingdent's announcement should be revoked to ensure the right to freedom of expression. The rights group says it is becoming increasingly difficult to speak freely in Cameroon. Paul Atanganji, Cameroon's territorial administration minister, says he is surprised that the opposition criticizes Biya, whom he says is the architect of Cameroon's democracy.
La démocratie et les libertés publiques.
He says democracy given to Cameroonians freely by Biya must be constructively used to build and not to destroy. He says all governments and administrative officials should be firm in punishing opposition and civil society members who defy and insult state authority. Nji told State TV on Tuesday that opposition parties that call for protests against state officials will be arrested for rebellion, insurrection, and treason. Cameroon's opposition accuses Biya of ruling with an iron fist and says he is not showing signs he is ready to relinquish power. Nda Greenbald, Assistant Secretary General of the Opposition Social Democratic Front Party, says Biya should emulate the example of U.S. President Joe Biden and hand over leadership to a dynamic civilian.
Our president, Paul Biya, is 10 years older than Biden. He's 91 years. And instead of thinking how to hand over power to the younger generation, his regime is doing everything to impede the rights, the fundamental rights of Cameroonians from assembling and discussing the affairs of their country.
Supporters of Biya say he is a Democrat and has won all elections since the return of multi-party politics in Cameroon in 1990. Biya has not said if he will be a candidate in the next presidential polls, but his party supporters have been organizing regular political rallies to urge him to run for re-election. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Sierra Leone, one of the lawyers for former President Ernest Bai Koroma says he is shocked by the guilty verdict against those charged with treason for last November's alleged failed coup because it did not follow the evidence presented in court. Lawyer Ade Makole, who also represented another of the accused, tells me that the charge that the plotter spoke by phone on the day of the alleged coup attempt is not accurate.
Firstly, my reaction will be based on my representation for the third accused person, Emmanuel Salifu Kamara, and also the ninth accused person, Inspector Ibrahim Cisse, both of whom were former bodyguard of the former president, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma. We are shocked and surprised because it is our belief that the verdict does not follow the evidence that was elicited during.
When you say it did not follow the evidence, what evidence did you present?
For example, the prosecution's case is that one of the bodyguards of the former president, Emmanuel Salifu Kamara, was in communication with the assailant as they were moving from one place to the other, attacking military installations in Freetown. And the prosecution tendered in exhibit as evidence the telephone call logs of the former bodyguard of the president, Salifu Kamara, and at least two of the assailants they claimed he was speaking to. The telephone call logs themselves confirmed that, indeed, he never spoke to any one of them on the day of the attack, which is on the 26th. But before the attack, they gave a telephone call log of about a month, and these are work colleagues working in the same shift. So it is not unusual for them to call each other. Most of the calls lasted between 20 to 40 or 50 seconds. So it was nothing out of the ordinary.
Amadou Keita Makalo, we understand here, according to the verdict, a former bodyguard of former President Ernest Bai Koroma. He got 102 years in prison. What do you make of that?
I cannot speak for Amadou Keita Makalo because I did not represent him. But what I can say with authority is that he has never been a bodyguard of former President Ernest Bai Koroma.
We know that the former President Koroma was also charged. So is there a verdict coming for him, or was he tried at any time?
He has not been tried yet. We are still in the preliminary stage of the proceedings in the magistrate court where they call preliminary investigations. That is the stage at which we are at the moment. So, we cannot expect any verdict now. We are still in the magistrate court. We have not gone to the high court where the trial proper is meant to take place.
How is the former president doing now?
Well, he's okay, resting and going through his retirement. And, he went to Nigeria on a medical fiat. And when it becomes necessary for him to come back to Sierra Leone, he will come back to Sierra Leone.
Ade Makole is one of the lawyers representing former President Ernest Bai Koroma. He was speaking with us from the capital, Sierra Leone capital, Freetown. And that's it for this Wednesday, July 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
France is hosting the 2024 Olympics starting July 26th. Join VOA's Mike Hovey and Mokbel Yabro as they detail the thrilling sports event competition for gold. Catch their exclusive insight on VOA Africa podcast. Visit voaafrica.com to listen.